when the gopis were looking for Krishna, when he abandoned them one time and during one of the dances, Lord Narayan, watching everything, felt sorry for them. So he came down, hid two of his arms behind his back, and started playing a flute. But the gopis were not fooled. Even Lord Narayan couldn't play a flute like Krishna. And his beauty is so amazing that even Lord Narayan cannot compare. Anyway, these things we know. And then the next section here is, there are two parts, two places in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna really addresses this subject, just like full frontal attack. Chapter 7, verses 20 to 23, chapter 9, verses 23 to 25. So Krishna makes it really clear. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. And so on. Anyway, you probably know these verses, but if you're having to preach to people who are interested in demigod worship, but they're also devotees or could become devotees, then just make a note that these are the places in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna addresses demigod worship. Chapter 7, chapter 9, and these verses. And then at the end we say how to relate to demigods, how to relate to demigod worship. So before we get into that, let us draw your attention to this work of art we have here. Yes. We will shortly sell the board for a lot of money. But anyway, there it is. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. This is what the offense mentions, because they're the biggest. And of the two, Lord Shiva is the biggest. So when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses this offense, he talks about being particularly careful about Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva, he says there are two categories of living entity that we know. There's Ishvara, the Vishnu Tattva, basically, the Ishvara category, and the Jiva category. We are in the Jiva category. And so is Lord Brahma. He's one of us. In fact, not only that, but we have all been Lord Brahma. Did you know that? You, Mataji, have been Lord Brahma. What do you think about that? Prabhupada says this very clearly in one purport in the ninth canto, that when the living entity enters the material world to start off with, the first birth is as Lord Brahma. So we have all been. And the current Lord Brahma in this universe is a jiva soul like us. And in every universe, all the Lord Brahmas, they're Jiva souls, but not Lord Shiva. Not Lord Shiva. His position is different. His position is he's part of the Ishvara category, along with Lord Vishnu. Yes, he's part of that category. But at the same time, we don't really consider him exactly to be part of that group. He occupies... Ultimately, we would say, ultimately he occupies his own position. So here we've drawn this little diagram. It's from Brahma Samhita. I mean, the concepts are from Brahma Samhita. And I don't know how familiar you are with Brahma Samhita or if when you read it you understood much. But from verse 7, 8, 9, and 10, they discuss what we are seeing here. And also, for that matter, verse 13, we've included something from there. We have Mahavishnu on the left. We have, in between, you see there's these red little dashes, red lines, and at the top there, it says Shambhu. So that is the glance of Mahavishnu. And on the right-hand side, we have Pradhan. Or in other words, the material nature when it's in a state of soup, you could say. All the ingredients are there, but they're all mixed up and you cannot tell what is what. Just like if you have a soup, yesterday someone made a soup for me, and you look at it and you couldn't see. There were green things, little bits and pieces, but you couldn't see. You know, here's some peas, yes, this is a pea soup, or here's some potato or cauliflower. It was all mixed up. So, of course, initially you had the peas and the cauliflower and the potato and all the different things individually situated, but then they mixed them all up when they made the soup. So, pradan means the material nature. When all the elements are there, everything is there, the modes are there, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then the three subtle elements, and the senses are there, the sense objects are there, the active senses are there, the knowledge acquiring senses are there. It's all there, but you can't see any of it for what, you know, anything is in terms of its own particular position. It's all mixed up like a soup, you could say. Anyway, Mahavishnu glances. That glance, normally if I glance, like here I am, I'm now glancing at Nisringananda Prabhu, and now at Atri Rishi and Kusum Sarona. So now I'm glancing. But there's no form to that glance. In other words, there's no contact between us in a literal sense. But in the case of Mahavishnu, his glance has a type of a form, and that is called Shambhu. And that glance makes contact with the pradhan, and actually a particular part or aspect of the pradhan, which is called the Adhara Shakti. Krishna is known as Giridhari. Dhara means carrier. Carrier. So the Adhara Shakti means that part of material nature which carries, it's like the womb of the mother which carries the impregnation from the male, and then the birth process goes on. So the glance goes like that. Now in the glance, you'll see the living entities are there, and beneath it it says the Kala Shakti is there. Kala of course means time. Krishna says, Kalosmi, Lokakshayakrit, I am time. I am time. So the Kala Shakti is there. And the Kala Shakti embodies, this is now getting slightly more technical, it embodies two particular functions. There are two particular aspects to it. Not actually to it, but it carries two functions. The function of the Lord's desire and the function of activity. Yeah. And the jivas in the Kala Shakti, they're sent within the glance. They're separate from the glance. They're within it, but they're not actually the glance. They're elements going sort of down the line of the glance. They are sent by the arrangement of Rama Devi, who's the goddess of fortune and the wife of Mahavishnu. She is who he is consorting with when he's in Yoga Nidra. You heard of Yoga Nidra? Yoga Nidra, N-I-D-R-A. Mahavishnu is always asleep, right? You heard about that? He's always sleeping. Yeah. That sleep is called Yoga Nidra. And he's enjoying his pleasure potency. The Lord, in all his forms, always has his pleasure potency with him, right? Radha, Krishna, Sita, Ram, Lakshmi, Narayan. In this case, Mahavishnu is enjoying his association with Rama Devi, who is a form of Radharani or Lakshmi, internally. Not, she is not external to him, as Radharani is external to Krishna in a sense. She is within him, because after all, she is his pleasure potency. That means she's part of him. Part of his nature, but in this case, instead of like Radharani is outside of Krishna, Rama Devi is within Mahavishnu, and they're enjoying pastimes together while he's in this state of yoga nidra, sleep. I mean, mystic sleep, it's not sleep. So anyway, by her arrangement, the jivas are thrown out into the material nature, through, down the highway, so to speak, of the glance, which has a form, which is like a halo, it's glowing, there's like this glow going between Mahavishnu and the pradhan, the material nature. And of course the pradhan means maya, Durga. And Durga is an expansion of Ramadevi. Are you getting all of this?
Yes.
Did you already know all this? Anyway, we don't want to lose anyone too much. So, to illustrate the principles involved, we've given this little explanation here, which is actually quite good. Comes from Tamal Krishna Goswami. Mahavishnu, this is the example of the electrical process. Mahavishnu is the powerhouse. Shambhu, the glance, is like the wire. Ramadevi, who is, you know, it's her potency that the jivas are going and that the Kala Shakti is going. These are all under her. So she's like the electricity. And pradhan, or the material nature, maya, Durga, is the electrified object. Yeah. So, Shambhu, who is Shambhu? He is Shiva. He's Lord Shiva. And he's the glance. And what is the glance? The glance is Mahavishnu's glance. You cannot separate that glance from Mahavishnu. That is intrinsically part of Mahavishnu's own person. But that glance, that part of Mahavishnu, that glance called Shambhu, then impregnates maya, the material nature. And by that contact with maya, becomes influenced by maya, and so achieves a position which is not purely spiritual, like Mahavishnu's position. You get the idea? So therefore, in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma gives another example, or gives an example to illustrate. I mean, we've given our electricity example here, gives some idea. But in terms of Shambhu, or Lord Shiva, and the position he attains through his contact with Durga, the material nature, this is, Lord Brahma says, it's like milk which has contacted a souring agent and become transformed from milk into yogurt. Yeah. So milk and yogurt, they're the same thing. Milk and yogurt, they're the same thing. They're not two different things altogether, like, you know, a motor car and an apple or something like that. They're just totally different. Milk and yogurt, they're very intrinsically linked. But at the same time, you can make milk from yogurt, but you can't make, you can make yogurt from milk, but you can't make milk from yogurt. Yogurt is fixed in that position, soured. Yogurt is sour. Milk which has become soured. So, Lord Shiva, Shambhu, who is the glance of Mahavishnu, through contact with Durga becomes soured and becomes influenced by the material nature and is permanently situated as such. Therefore, even though in one sense you cannot make a distinction between Lord Shiva, Shambhu, and Mahavishnu, but actually you have to make a distinction. Yeah. So this is the idea. And Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur goes to some lengths to talk about this. We should be careful as devotees how we talk about Lord Shiva. Don't underestimate him. I know sometimes people complain to us, but why do you criticize the demigods? Have you ever heard that? Yeah. We don't criticize the demigods. We may criticize the process of mundane worship of the demigods, but the demigods are very respectable. And particularly Lord Shiva is very special. He's a form of Vishnu. He is part of the personal nature of Lord Vishnu. But he's attained a very special position due to contact with Durga, who was his wife. So here we have, in Brahma Samhita goes on to make the point that this is like the prototype, this is actually the prototype form of the reproductive process as we know it in this material world. The male and female combination, and the living entity being placed in the female, in the womb, by dint of the male. And Lord Brahma goes on to say in Brahma Samhita that this principle illustrated here is reflected in every single living entity in the material world. They're all reflections of this. And the thing is, what happens? The souring process, when Shambhu, that form of Lord Shiva, contacts Maya, Durga, in the form of injecting the living entities, sexual reproduction like that. So, through the contact of the two, the first thing that is produced is called perverted consciousness, material consciousness. And Lord Shiva, he's affected by that perverted consciousness, material consciousness. So anyway, I just thought I'd put that up there for the sake of interest, so you would have some little, perhaps clearer understanding of the position of Lord Shiva. Is that okay? You follow that? Any comments or questions? Oh, okay. Well, that's a good question. Yes, in the Bhagavatam, it's clearly described. Lord Vishnu enters, I mean, Garbhadakshay Vishnu particularly enters each universe. From his navel comes a lotus. From the lotus comes Lord Brahma, and then a little later, Lord Shiva comes from the forehead, from the mind actually, of Lord Brahma. So now the thing is that there are different forms of Lord Shiva. And actually, just while we're at it, I just noticed one thing I didn't mention. All the universes, right? See, all the universes, they're on their way. They come out of the pores of the body of Mahavishnu. They also go into the Adhara Shakti, into the womb, that particular part of material nature. A little later, after the living entities have been implanted and become activated, then the universes come, and then all the elements are placed in the universes, and the universes expand, and then Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters. So, anyway, the different forms of Lord Shiva. This is one of the original forms. Prabhupada, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, the chapter about describing Advaita Acharya, Prabhupada talks about Sada Shiva. There is a form of Lord Shiva who has a Vaikuntha planet. And he's known, in Vaikuntha, he's known as Sada Shiva. He's the original form of Shiva. And he is present also in the form of, but within Mahavishnu. And then when Mahavishnu glances, then that Sada Shiva is making contact there. Then he, Sada Shiva, becomes the husband of Durga. But not the Durga within our universe. He becomes the husband of Durga, who's the presiding deity of the entire material nature. And then they both expand into each universe. and become the Shiva and Parvati, Shiva and Durga, or Shiva and Sati, their different forms. Within each universe, on Mount Kailash, so their expansions from the original Shiva and the original Durga. There's also an original Brahma, and he's called Hiranyagarbha. Anyway, we don't want to go into the intricacies of Brahma Samhita here necessarily, but there are original demigods, and they expand into each universe. There's an original fire demigod. There's several original demigods, and they're presiding over their particular functions in the whole material nature. They then expand into each universe. So the Lord Shiva, who comes from the mind of Lord Brahma, when Lord Brahma gets angry with the four Kamas, he's expanded from Shambhu. He's expanded from Shambhu. And even sometimes, if a living entity becomes particularly powerful, he can become a Shakyavesh avatar of Lord Shiva. There are such cases. Where Lord Shiva within the universe is a jiva like us. And actually Lord Shiva mentions that in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam in his song. There's the chapter called Singing the Song of Lord Shiva. He mentions, I forget the exact details, but something like, if you perform your Varnashram duties, or if you're a Brahmin and you perform your duties perfectly for 100 lifetimes, you become Lord Brahma. And if you go on further and do more, you can become Lord Shiva. So it's possible for jivas to become Lord Shiva. I mean, in the sense of being Shaktyavesh. Otherwise, this is the position of Shiva here. In principle, this is how we should understand Shiva. That he's part and parcel of Mahavishnu. He's his glance. And a person's glance is part of their being. But he's had contact with Durga. And because of that contact, he's become soured. So that is Lord Shiva. So on one hand, we shouldn't underestimate Lord Shiva. And we shouldn't, speak against him. On the other hand, we have to understand he's permanently situated like that, and that's how we take him. Like yogurt in relation to milk. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. With our course on the 10 offences. And we only have another 2 days left. We have 8 more to do, and actually there's an 11th offense, of course, in a sense. So we have 9 to do. So it looks like we're going to have to move on a little bit, speed up a little bit. So we're starting today with the 3rd offense, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. And of course, I haven't been following this course which Brihat Mridanga Prabhu is teaching, but I think it may be connected, is it? Anyway, there's some things to do there with the spiritual master. And here you'll see we have given 3 headings here, 3 aspects to the subject of disobeying the orders of the spiritual master. First is just in regard to the importance of the spiritual master generally. So that's a very important principle. The principle of guru, the principle of spiritual master, is very, very vital in Krishna consciousness. Then secondly, the importance of the founder acharya, in other words, the importance of Srila Prabhupada, that is another very, very important element actually, in our lives in Krishna consciousness. And thirdly, Srila Prabhupada's explanation of the fall of the Gaudiya mat. So, in other words, an example of what can happen if they commit this offense, basically. What can happen if one commits this offense?
disobeying the orders of the spiritual master. And everything can fall to pieces. And basically, the Gaudiya Mutt has fallen to pieces, and the only ones who are successful at all are those who hang around the periphery of ISKCON, trying to somehow or other get some disgruntled devotees, or, you know, somehow or other, someone who's so keen on getting initiation that they don't really care about the standard. So when they hear that we only require four rounds, then they think, gosh, that's better than this one. What a good deal. But it's not really, it's a bad deal. Okay, so this is the third offence then, and it's important. Of course, it's also an offence which I think you're quite aware of. The importance of the spiritual master, I think you're aware of that, basically. We've quoted Lord Chaitanya from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vrimanda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Varavinch. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. So, the importance of the spiritual master, as I say, I think you're all, you at least have a basic understanding of the idea that we're wandering here in the material world, we're lost. Lost in the material world. Lost completely. We really don't know where we're going. But Krishna, the devotees are there, and the devotees are carrying Krishna's mercy, and the devotees are trying to help the fallen conditioned souls. So if we're fortunate, or if the devotees are merciful and they extend themselves, going here and there, trying to find people, trying to give people the opportunity for Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said that about himself. He said, I did not wait to become invited to America. I just came. So this is the mood. This is Srila Prabhupada's mood. And this is the mood that the preachers should have, trying to find opportunities, not sitting there in the temple waiting for the people to come, then we'll preach to them. Of course, you know, when people come, obviously, we will preach to them. And the temples are there for that, so people can come. But the devotees are ready to go out and extend themselves. And this is their mercy. So by such mercy, the devotees extending themselves, one meets the devotees, one can meet a bona fide spiritual master who is able to actually awaken your Krishna consciousness and give you guidance so you can then start making your way down the path back home, back to Godhead. That's very important. Yeah, very, very important principle. And it's a principle I'm sure you're all aware of. And, you know, the importance, good fortune of meeting bona fide spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada gave an example. He said, it's something like the chances, the likelihood of meeting a bona fide spiritual master in the material world is something like if you have in the Pacific Ocean, big ocean, you have one turtle swimming. And also in the Pacific Ocean, somewhere, just anywhere, could be anywhere at all, somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, you have one piece of wood with a hole in it, floating there. And that hole is just big enough so that the turtle's head could fit up through it without touching the sides when the turtle occasionally comes up to take a breath of air. So the likelihood, in general, the likelihood is something like that. That the turtle, just swimming around, could be anywhere, And that piece of wood floating around could be anywhere from Los Angeles to Tokyo, or Alaska to the Antarctic, or whatever, you know, in the Pacific Ocean. But somehow it just happens that the turtle comes to the surface to take a breath of air, and his head goes through the hole without touching the sides. Not that he was...